Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley. In this episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Burnley at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, but before we do anything, I always have to welcome my co-host back to the show. Mr. Hulley, how are you doing?
Hello again, Russ. I'm fine. Thank you very much. Still sniveling a little bit with my cold, but getting better slowly and recovered from my long Saturday trip. Just in time for another long Tuesday night trip.
Yes, you're going to be back at the cottage tomorrow night against Burnley. It should be interesting. I look forward to going through this with you, David, because Burnley are an interesting team, and we'll be talking about that in some decent detail coming up. But before we go into talking about Burnley, a couple things I want to talk to you about. First, we did not get a chance on the post-match show to really rate Savisa from the match on Saturday. So I want to get your thoughts on how he did in that match. So let's go back. Let's talk about the 2-2 draw, but I just want you to focus specifically on the Fulham head coach.
Well, for me, there are these red lines, and he crossed one of them, unfortunately. So I'm going to be rating him down. And the red lines are play Tom Kenny in the middle, got that one right. Play Ross McCormack up front as a striker. He didn't. You know, he might as well have not played McCormack at all, almost, for what good it was him stuck on the left wing. We all know that. We've seen it before. We've had so much debate in the past about, you know, when he used to play him deep. That was Kit used to play him deep. He used to come deep. And Ross McCormack saying himself he wanted to play up front. and we know that, he can be a devastating striker and he can score the goals. But he's got to be near the goal. He's not blessed with brilliant pace. You know, he's not, you know, that sort of player who's going to pick up the ball and run at defenders and beat them. You know, occasionally he'll get a long shot and hit it well, but normally he does his business in and around the box. So, for me, it was a big no-no. And in trying to, you know, adjust the team, he just ended up, you know, messing up Ross McCormack, really. And it meant that Dembele was isolated. Dembele worked so hard. Kearney lost one of his outlets, really, because Kearney was ahead of Ross the whole game, literally. So the only time he could bring Ross into the game was a backward pass, a sideways pass. So it was no good for Kearney. It was no good for Dembele, really. So that was a big no-no for me. And I'm disappointed that Slavisa would compromise, you know, that. That's not a compromise you can make. Sure, you can say we should play three at the back or four at the back or five at the back or, you know, other things you can maybe do. Bringing in Richards, maybe in Fredericks. You could say, well, they had a good guy on the left in Ola John, and there's justification for why he maybe thought that might be the right move. But not in what he did with McCormack. You know, he was completely ineffective out there. So for me, it was a total waste. I could argue that taking Fredericks off, we lost our impetus as well for Kaká, but Fredericks was probably a bit on the tired side. So really, he went about a system and it didn't really work. We still have, you know, issues in there with, you know, not being tight at the back. We gave away two very stupid goals. Okay, that's the team more than Slavisa. I don't think he encouraged that. But I'm just going to give him a 5 out of 10, I'm afraid, because I think that it was too unsettling, the changes he made. We lost, you know, we lost one of our strengths, which is what McCormack can offer up front. And it's not like he does a job somewhere else where it makes up for it, but it doesn't. You know, he just fills in there, and he looks like a fish out of water, really stuck down there. Doesn't get involved with the game enough. Ended up coming back, being part of the mess that led to the first goal. So 5 out of 10, I'm afraid. That's all I can give him.
Okay, very interesting. And I'm going to throw something out at you, David, because Giannis mentioned it on the post-match show, and I do agree with you on the waste of McCormack on the left. I couldn't agree with you more. But Giannis brought up a good point. Before we gave up the goal, the penalty situation with Fernando Amorebieta, Fulham were pretty much in decent shape. I mean, they were playing some good football, David. So he did set us up, you know, fairly well. I mean, I totally disagree with McCormack on the left. I'm there with you. But don't you have to give him a little bit more credit, because it did work in the beginning?
I don't know. It's hard to say, because in it? Was it something that was going to happen? What would have happened had we been set up differently? You know, it's not a question you can answer, really. Yes, we did start positively, I have to give you that. But, you know, you could say that we've been found out, perhaps. Maybe after 20 minutes they realised our weaknesses. They realised that perhaps they didn't need to be as defensive because McCormack wasn't anywhere near the goal, I don't know. Maybe they made some subtle change to the way they played. Obviously, I think, you know, we handed it to them on a plate. But suddenly the setup we did have wasn't as effective. So, we did get back into the game, but that was literally down to one man, and that was Fredericks. You know, without Fredericks' pace to do what he did, I don't think we'd have got back into the game, not really. Second half was very, very flat. Even when we were, you know, in a position to chase the game and nick a win, the setup didn't seem to be right, or the motivation wasn't right. So, you know, yes, I accept we did start well and we looked fairly comfortable, but, you know, we were found out, perhaps. You know, that's the way I could look at it.
Okay, very interesting there, David. And I want to ask you, because you were just talking about this, because I thought taking off Fredericks and bringing on Kaká didn't really work. Kaká, I don't think, offered us that much. You already said this. Do you think that the reason for this was tiring by Fredericks?
Well, I hadn't noticed it myself, but other people had said that he was exhausted, and there does seem to be this perception that he's not a player that can play 90 minutes. He has played 90 minutes for us a few times, but many times he hasn't, and I will bow to the other people that said that he looked exhausted, because I can't say either way, really. So obviously if he's tired, yes, perhaps you do have to make a change, but the trouble is there is no one who is a like-for-like replacement, not really. I mean, Kaká is a left midfielder, really, by default. The fact that Slavica and others have played him on the right doesn't mean that he is a right midfielder necessarily. I know teams kind of like this modern way of playing with inverted wide men, but, you know,
right.
We played with a proper wide man. He was, you know, a wide man on the right, Fredericks, and he did his job. And, you know, I guess you saw the showreel from Fulham today, sort of highlighting why he was voted man of the match for Fulham. And he does one thing, you know, it's a one-trick pony to a point, but he's very good at it. He's got extreme pace. He can get behind anyone, and that's what you need. Kaká can't do that. Kaká's quite quick, but especially on the right, he hasn't got the confidence. On the left, perhaps a little bit better because he's on his natural foot. But on the right, his right foot isn't strong enough to go on the outside and get a cross in, not really. Damien Duff used to be okay at it, but we haven't seen many left-footed players who can do it on the right. And, you know, so taking Fredericks off full stop, we lose something there. But obviously, if he's tired, you need to make a change. But there isn't anyone else that can come in and do that job at the moment. And that's what we were relying on, really, on Saturday. That was our real kind of threat. Dembele, he huffed and puffed, he ran hard, he ran the channels, but he had very little support. McCormack was miles away. He couldn't do a lot at all. Garbutt, I thought he was very weak Saturday. He wasn't getting forward at all. Wasn't you know, helping out down the left. You know, and this is why, you know, I think in the long run we need someone else there. Obviously Garbutt's not our player. But you know, whether you're playing,
well, I know
you
who
know,
you want, David. David,
well,
we know who you want.
We all know who we'd love to come back to Fulham, because we've seen him play that role, we've seen him get forward and take people on and get crosses in.
James,
you know, that's not going to be McCormack. You won't get that with McCormack left midfield. You know, he wasn't even a forward midfielder, not really. He was playing, he was back and forth. You know, he was back helping out with the defence. It wasn't like he was playing as a wide man of three. He wasn't. He was playing as a wide man of four, really, or a left midfielder. It just didn't work for me, and you know, this is the problem we have with the 3-5-2 and anything else, because we're relying on people like Fredericks to be fit and to do what they do. Otherwise, as we saw against, you know, Middlesbrough last time, when Fredericks came off, there was no one else to play that role, and we lost our attacking thrust.
Yeah, David, listen, I'm there with you on Ryan Fredericks. He does offer something that Fulham don't have without him, and I think that they need to be playing him when he can. Interesting question. Can he go 90 minutes? Can he do it? You know, it's he's been taken off on a few occasions. You know, he is dealing with or has been dealing with injuries. So it's interesting. I would like to see him go 90 minutes, but he was taken off in this match, and I don't think Kaka offered, obviously, David, what Ryan Fredericks did. And very interesting on, you know, we're talking about a left back or potentially left wing back and someone like Garbutt. And I do agree with you. I wish Fulham had James Husband back. I'm not going to disagree with you. If I'm them, I try to get him over the summer, because I think if you have Fredericks on one side and you have Husband on the other, I think you have a, you know, you really have two really dynamic sides going at the same time. So I think I hear where you're going on this, David. Let me ask you before we move on from Slavisa, because, you know, it's okay to be critical of Slavisa. Well, I want you to be critical of Slavisa, but I do have to ask you this. Did he get it right with Jazz Richards and Fredericks playing back-to-back to each other?
This is the thing. I would say, with the disruption it caused to the rest of the team, I'd say no. I don't think Jazz Richards did a bad job, and you know I'm very critical of Jazz Richards, but I think he did his job okay.
I know you are. That's
okay.
Why I'm asking the question.
Jazz Richards did his job fine. He was fine, but it was the disruption to the team that, you know, that we could have left Jazz Richards out and you know, played the third defender and rejigged things, and McCormack would have been up front. And I think, yeah, Reading, they were fairly ordinary. We should have been pressing them more. So it was a negative move, maybe with, you know, the intention of countering Ola John. But then,
right,
had we had the three at the back, that would have been Maddle's role to come over there, I think, and smother him. And, you know, we're quite confident with Maddle's ability. Fredericks would still get back anyway with his speed to try and do what he does. So I don't think we'd have lost anything really defensively in that respect. But
okay,
the bonus would have been that we'd have had McCormack up front doing what he does. That's the criminal thing, to put McCormack where he was. That just,
yeah, it all goes back to that, David.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah.
No, very good, very very interesting. Because I want to get into this, because we're going to be talking about the Burnley match, and I'll be curious what your thoughts on how Fulham should line up against them. They play a traditional 4-4-2. They pretty much have played it the entire season. Do you go with a 3-5-2? Do you go with matching up with them, playing a 4-4-2? We'll talk about that in a little bit. But before we do, David, I mentioned to you off air that I wanted to read a little bit to you from this article on CottagersConfidential.com by David Kettle-Hake. And it is entitled Gloom and Doom and a Glass Half Full. Very interesting read. It's an opinion piece. I'm just going to read it to you, and I want to get your opinion on what David had to share. So, again, this is right from the article. This is from David Kettle-Hake. Fulham sit 19th. That's bad. But there are five teams with a goal differential of at least 13 goals worse than Fulham, so maybe it isn't as bleak as things seem. It's pretty lousy 3 years for anyone wearing a white and black shirt. I can't believe we're actually talking about relegation again, but I'm a glass-half-full kind of person. So even with all the gloom and doom I see on Twitter, Facebook, and reading the newspapers, I'm confident we'll stay up again this year, and here's why. Last year at this time, we were sitting on 39 points. Today, we're parked just below that at 37. However, last year, our squad was significantly weaker than our present one, and if you'd like some proof of that, I'll be happy to toss out a few names to jog your memory. Just tell me to stop when you've suffered enough. Gabor Kirilay, Nikolai Bodorov, Kostas Stafelidis, Kai Vozer, Adil Chihi, Elsad Veretic. Today's squad is better. They're not great, but they are better. We have the most potent strike force in the championship with Ross and Musa. We've got an improving and creative midfield with Kearney, O'Hara, Baird, and a rejuvenated Parker. Our defense is not as bad as it used to be, but still needs some hefty shoring up over the summer, and a good place to start would be picking up Michael Maddow's contract, Schnell. Lastly, some of our long-term injuries, such as Woodrow and Bettinelli, could be back in the first team this week. Not only that, but I think it's fair to say that Slavisa is a better manager than his recent predecessors. He's significantly savvier, more creative, and has a refreshing habit of telling it like it is. Has he gotten everything right since he started pacing the technical area? No, but but at least I don't wince in pain and cover my eyes each time we concede a corner kick or set play. And with the exception of the Blackburn match, the losses we've suffered since Lavezza took over haven't been so lopsided and, frankly, embarrassing. Still unconvinced? We'll survive the drop? Okay, let's do the math. As I said before, we're currently at 37 points, and the standard assumption is that we'll need 50 to be assured of safety. We've got 11 matches left, and three of those teams are amazingly enough below us in the table. From our last 11 matches, we earned 10 points. I wouldn't bet my house on it, but I feel pretty certain that we can pick up at least 12 or 13 points from the remaining games. Don't forget, Bristol City, MK Dons, and Bolton are all at home at the Cottage, which should equate to at least 7 points. We really should have the backbone to pick up at least a few more wins and ties along the way, pushing us over the top. And when we're there and when we're safe and sound, and then I'll hoist my glass half full, and we can drink to the next season. Okay, that is an article today on Cottagers Confidential by David Kettlehay. David, what are your thoughts of what David had to write today?
Well, I actually was struck by your accidental portmanteau of our strikers in the same vein as a Brangelina. So you called them Roos, wasn't it, I think?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, no, I quite like that. That thing was the thing that most cheered me up of all of it, actually, to be honest with you. The rest was kind of, I guess, it was basically factual. It was kind of, you know, reading out a list of stats of what's happened, what's likely to happen, you know, pointing out a few obvious things, just laying it all out, really, you know, the fact that it's in our hands, most certainly, that the opposition that we have some, you know, fairly kind fixtures to come still. We obviously have a good strike force. We have a better defence than we had. We have a better coach than we had. And our goal difference is obviously worth a point as well, if nothing else. So I think, yeah, I think it was a fairly factual thing, but a reason, hopefully, to convince anyone who's very concerned about our predicament that, you know, the drop is very unlikely to happen. And I'm with you that I don't think the drop will happen, Russ. I really am. I know the danger is there, and mathematically it's possible, but
sure,
it would be a massive disaster and a very unprecedented thing for it to happen. So, you know, I think it's a well-reasoned piece, and it doesn't really tell me anything I didn't know, but it just kind of lays it all out in a rational way that, you know, people can look at and take it in and think, oh well, perhaps it's not as bad as we thought it was.
Right, and that's why I wanted to read it to you, David. I thought David did a very good job of just, as you mentioned, laying it all out for you, the facts and everything to go with it, and then just showed it to you and then let you read and make of it what you will. And what I make of it is similar to you, David. I think it would have to be a catastrophic disaster for them to go down at this point. It is possible, like you mentioned, it's mathematically possible, but I think it would take a great deal for that to happen. That's why I think the odds are in our favor that we will stay up, and let's get there sooner than later. I think that was his point at the very end. And then we could talk about next season. We're not there yet, but I do believe that we will stay up, and then we can move on from there. And, you know, and then I really, honestly, I really want to look forward to next season, because I think that there's a, you know, there's exciting times ahead of us. That's just my thoughts, but I guess we have to get there first, my friend. All right. Let's go now. Let's talk about Burnley. And I'll share some information to you from whoscored.com. We'll just start with the basics. David, Burnley are first in the league. They have 19 victories, 11 draws, 5 losses. They've scored 54. They've only given up 27. They're on a plus 27 goal differential. They're on 68 points. Fulham are currently 19th. We only have 8 victories, 13 draws, 14 losses. We've scored 53, but we've given up 58. We are on a minus 5 goal differential. Okay, here's some information about Burnley. Again, from whoscored.com, their strengths, shooting from direct free kicks and finishing scoring chances, they're very strong. They're strong in attacking set pieces, creating chances using through balls, aerial duels, and protecting the lead. Their weaknesses, keeping possession of the ball, avoiding offside. Their style, attacking through the middle, long balls. attempt through balls often, non-aggressive, consistent with their first 11, playing in their own half. Okay, let's move on to tell you some players to look out for. Their leading goal scorer is actually Andre Gray with 19 goals. He has more than McCormack at this point. Sam Vogts, their other striker, has 9 goals. Their leader in assists is also Andre Gray with 6. So that just tells you some information on them, David. Before I give you the stats breakdown, because I want to go through the stats breakdown with you, on the information I just shared with you, what are your thoughts about this match tomorrow?
Well, it makes me think we need to be strong through the middle, because they've just said that they go through the middle and through balls. And, you know, on that one, you think, well, that's the perfect sort of scenario then for playing the 3-5-2 scenario. So, you know, we have the three in central midfield, we have the three in central defence. You know, and we need to cope with, obviously, you know, the fact that both their strikers are, you know, pretty prolific. Obviously, Andre Gray specifically. You know, but we have, you know, the second best striker in the league statistically as well. So, you know, they have to worry about that. But it will be interesting to see how they match up, because obviously WhoScored.com suggests we'll play a 3-5-2 where there'll be 4-4-2. And it's trying to work
right
out all the individual battles, who's going to be involved with who there. Obviously, you know, you'd imagine that Parker will be up against Barton, you'd think, isn't it, if he's playing.
Right.
That would be the kind of key battle in midfield there. Obviously, Gray will be marshalled by, I don't know, maybe by Ream. It's a Ream. By, I don't know, we've got Ream down here throwing me out. Maddle, probably, or Byrne. They keep saying Ream's going to play on WhoScored.com, don't they? I don't know why.
They do.
Every game they keep saying Ream's going to play. I'm not sure what they know that we don't. But, yeah, I think it's... I'm trying to work out the individual battles here, really, but also the fact that there was no mention there of wing play, particularly, or crosses. So, you know, it makes me think that the 3-5-2 would be a possible scenario to work against. And even though, if you remember, we played first half away from home, 3-5-2 up at Burnley, and then we switched second half to 4-4-2 and were more effective. I think the game was kind of slipping away a little bit, but... You know, it was a close finish in the end there. It was, you know, it wasn't a thrashing by any means. So it's going to be very interesting to see what he does tomorrow with, you know, he has obviously a couple of different players. But for a team that's strong through the middle, you think by having three central midfielders and three central defenders, the logic is that makes us stronger than if we had two of each.
No, it's interesting, David, because I was going to bring that up to you when we really get into this, talk about the formation, because you just brought up a point that I remember from the Burnley match, is that we did play 3-5-2, and he changed it. Kit changed it in the second half to play 4-4-2, and it was more effective. So does Slavisa look at that and say, you know what, they play a 4-4-2, we're just going to play it back at them? But then you bring up a very good argument of why the 3-5-2 could work. It's interesting, but we'll talk about that in a little bit, David. I'm going to give you the stats breakdown, also from WhoScored.com, comparing the two teams. And let's start with possession. Fulham currently third in the league at 53.1%. Burnley are ninth, I believe. I'm sorry, I got it all wrong, David. I was looking at the wrong stats breakdown. That's a major Goldman there.
A Goldman,
Major Goldman. Burnley are currently 19th. At 47.9%. I was looking at the Reading breakdown. That was not good by me. All right, shots per game. Fulham are currently 16th with 12.1. Burnley are actually 20th at 11.8. Passing success, Fulham are 6th at 76.2. Burnley are 18th at 69.6. Aerials 1, Fulham are 13th at 20.6. And Burnley are 7th at 23.5. Crosses per game, David, this is something that you were just talking about. Fulham are 21st at 18, but Burnley are 17th with 19. Long balls per game. Fulham are 14th with 84 long balls per game. David, Burnley are third in the league with 93 long balls per game. And trust me, on the video that I saw, they did a good amount of that. Short balls, Fulham are fourth in the league with 395, and Burnley are 15th at 317. All right. David, what sticks out to you with the stats comparison that I just went over with you?
I'm sure Mike will be upset, that, as I am, that long balls is still rated that way, that teams that play more long balls are rated higher than teams that play less, because I would still argue that's not necessarily very nice football. But it sounds so much that they play everything through the middle, or mostly through the middle, because, you know, on crossing, they're pretty low. Through balls, long balls, they're much higher. So this is certainly a game where it looks like, you know, they get their effectiveness by playing narrow. And we know what, you know, Andre Gray can offer. He offers pace and directness. And I think, you know, in the game up at Turf Moor, he just ran through the middle of us. And, you know, so we've got to be strong in the middle. Not to say that we can't, you know, we should abandon the flanks. But, you know, this, if anything, out of all the games we've played recently, this one sounds like the most likely for playing the 3-5-2. And it begs the question then, you know, why did we start with the 3-5-2 at Turf Moor and abandon it? You know, why wasn't it working as well as it should be working? What did Burnley do that counteracted that? Because when you look at it, you think, well, the extra man in midfield is going to, you know, nullify what they offer. We've got to close them down, stop them playing the long balls. Also, the extra defender should provide a bit of a shield, you know, for the other defenders. You know, if one defender misses it, there's still two more there, theoretically, who can mop up. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But, you know, it's going to be a difficult match. We know we can't take anything away from that. You know, the table doesn't lie, remember. And
sure.
Burnley have been prolific in their goal scoring, and they've been, you know, pretty miserly in their defence. And so, you know, we've got to catch them on the off day. We've got to have a plan that's going to be more effective on the night. And I don't know, you know, what that will be, but I guess, you know, if perhaps they're not a team that use their width a lot, if we can get Fredericks to do what he was doing against Reading, things like that, get in the side behind them. But then we've got to have McCormick up there causing them problem. If McCormick is withdrawn or deep or wide, then we'll be banging our head against the wall. We might as well give them the 3 points almost, because I think we lose too much of our effectiveness. But yeah, for me, it's going to be in that centre third of the pitch, I think, really. And I'm not talking about horizontally, I'm talking sort of lengthways. You know,
right.
have a central strip, you know, the whole length
the
of the
spine,
pitch.
David. The spine.
Yeah.
You're talking
that's
about
right.
The spine.
Yeah, that's the spine. That's where I think this game really can hinge upon that part of the pitch and that part of the play.
Okay, let's go back to that Burnley match, because I remember watching it. And part of the problem was Andre Gray. I'm glad that you brought him up. And if I can remember correctly, Dan Byrne really struggled with Andre Gray. What would you do defensively to deal with someone like Andre Gray? I'm curious.
Well, we have, of course, you know, the butcher of Bilbao back as well now, whatever he's called, you know. Mr. Lambretta, as Mike calls him, I think it is. But, yeah, he obviously is, he has his own way of doing things differently to others. And, you know, if he's assigned with the job to sort of look after Gray, it will be a bit of rough and tumble there, because he doesn't, you know, mess around, you know, he does go over the top sometimes and gets himself booked, gives away silly penalties, as we know from Saturday. But we didn't have him last time, for starters. Obviously, we didn't have Maddall last time, who's
a
very organised defender. So that's straight away, it's two different things. Dan Byrne's question is very interesting, because I wonder if part of the reason that Byrne didn't play was that he just needed a rest on Saturday as well. You know, he's played every game. And you know, I was talking to Mike about these things earlier, and they analyse their bloods and they check all their hemoglobins and everything. And they can tell by all these, you know, scientific criteria if a player is fatigued or not and needs a rest. And it may just come down to the fact that we've got two important home games coming up this week. And Slavisa felt this was time to change things around slightly, give a rest to Byrne. And I don't know. You know, it's hard to be sure, but you know, perhaps he wanted Byrne to be, you know, fresh and fit for Tuesday night because of the task ahead. So, yeah, I think if it was Dan Byrne on his own, he's going to struggle because Gray is strong and with pace. But, you know, We have a bit of pace in Madel. We have organisation in Madel. We have strength with Amir Bietje. If he can keep it focused and challenged, and channeled, I should say. So I think that's, you know, the way forward. And maybe Bern, you know, as we've seen before, you have the two kind of marking defenders in Madel and Amir Bietje, and Bern as the free man really to mop up.
No, that's a good point, David. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I was trying to think, going even back to the QPR match and the very good job that Fernando Morbieta did in that match. And I'm thinking, you know, trying to think about moving forward to this match, because Andre Gray scares me. He was a handful at Turf Moor, and I think he's the key to this match, stopping him, basically not eliminating him, but containing him. Because obviously, look, he has the majority of the goals, but Sam Vokes is someone that can score as well. So it's not all about him, David, but he's a big part of what they do. So it's really going to be about, for me, containing him. So that's going to lead me to ask you, who are your key players for this match? And I'm just going to throw out a couple names that I think are going to be key. I truly believe that two key players in this match, and I think they're both going to play, are going to be. It's going to be Chris Baird, but more importantly, it's going to be Scott Parker.
Well, I'm not sure about Baird. He played 90 minutes at Reading, and Parker, you know, only a few minutes off the bench. I'm wondering if, in fact, Baird is going to be, you know, he was covering for Parker that day, and if Parker's going to play and Baird isn't.
Okay.
That'll be
a good point
to see, but certainly I think you could probably put your life on it that Parker's going to play. You'd imagine so anyway in this important match. And, you know, he needs his experience up against the experience of Barton. So I think, you know, we are talking about the spine of the team, really, for important players. And it's going to be the defensive guys, you know, to do their job and keep Gray. Because you can keep Gray out of the game, you've got half a chance then. And that's going to be people like Madel and Amir Bietje, of course. And Bern if he's playing, but down the spine, I think, you know, we may see O'Hara ahead of Baird, because O'Hara also came off perhaps because, you know, to give him a bit of a break for tomorrow. I don't think he played that badly really on Saturday, O'Hara.
David, I'm going to give you one more name that we have not heard from in a long time since the first time he played, Rohan Ince.
Well, he seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth, hasn't he?
Yes.
I mean, he could reappear at any time, and, you know, this could be, you know, the time he reappears. We don't know, but there's been, you know, some people have said he's injured, some people said he's not. It's very interesting that he's brought in, you know, by Slavisha to do a specific job, and he played sort of 45 minutes, was taken off, and hardly seen again since. It's very, very strange. So I'm not sure if tomorrow's the night when he would bring him in or not, really. You know, you could also... I was talking to Mike earlier, and he said that maybe Tynecliffe could come in as well. The trouble with Tynecliffe at the moment, he's overly clean to impress, and he's just picking up yellow cards very easily. And I think someone like Jerry Barton would just wind him up and get him sent off. So... I'm not sure if it's time to bring Tynecliffe back in either. We need a bit more discipline in there. I think Jamie O'Hara is more disciplined, and Scott Parker certainly more disciplined. We don't want people going in at the deep end and giving away stupid free kicks. And, you know, especially with George Boyd out there as well, remember. You know, he's, as I say, I was going to run a poll, actually. You run a poll about if it's going to be win, you know, draw or lose. I was going to run a poll of how long before George Boyd's on the floor. You know, will he be first 10 minutes? Yeah, I'm sure he probably won't even last that long. But, you know, he's a guy who likes to throw himself to the ground. So we've got to be careful about how we approach him as well, not giving away free kicks, because we've identified already that in Burnley are good at direct free kicks. So
they are.
We don't want to be giving them away. Barton is obviously quite useful with free kicks as well. And we just don't want to bring this danger on ourselves. So I don't think we want anyone too rash in midfield who's going to be giving away easy free kicks all the time or towards our penalty box. So it's important to have a strong spine of the team, but strong without being reckless.
That's a very good point, David, because we haven't talked about how to win this match, but it sounds like for you, and I'm don't mean to be putting words in your mouth because I want to talk about how Fulham can win this match. Sounds like for you, David, it really is right up the middle of the central midfield battle, but also the defenders, the center backs for you are going to be key in this match. Is that fair to say?
Well, certainly. They need to do their job. We need to keep Burnley shut down, and then we can concentrate on doing things further forward. Because, you know, they're the sort of team we'll catch us on the break if we're not careful as well, really. You can see that sort of thing happen if we commit ourselves forward, make mistakes, quick ball over the top or through the middle for Andre Gray. They're good at it, and he'll be through clear. And that's really not what we want to be doing. You know, it could almost be like, you know, the Ipswich one. If we don't watch where we go, if we don't start strongly, we could end up like that, conceding the goal very, very early on. So, you know, these guys in the spine need to do their job to hopefully allow people like Fredericks and O'Hara a bit of space and time and width as well, obviously in Fredericks' case, to link up with McCormack and Dembele. And Garbett, hopefully, as well, can chip in on the other side. And then at least we have something to take at them as well. And certainly, as I say, if we can get Fredericks forward, you know, he hasn't got to worry about coming back to defend all the time, then we've got half a chance of causing them problems as well with his pace and everything. And as I say, McCormack up front, it's not going to be easy. Obviously, you know, you could say, oh, well, they're a good team, we won't bother playing any strikers because we're not going to score anyway. You know, that's a bit what Slavisa did against Middlesbrough to a point. You know, he left them barely out and played an extra midfielder. And it was horrible, really. For me, it was a big mistake. So you can't just concede the fact that the other team are going to be, you know, tough to break down and then not go for it. Because otherwise, you will spend the whole game in our own half. And that will just lead to us, you know, losing the match, I would imagine. So we've got to be able to, you know, have McCormack to hold the ball up. To link with, you know, with Dembele and to link with Tom Cairney, of course, and hopefully, you know, get Garbett and Fredericks overlapping as well, you know, to link up with that. So, you know, it's two different battles really to win. One is the spine battle and one is the attacking battle. If we can win both, then we have a chance. But it's not going to be easy, is it?
It's not going to be easy, David. This is a very well-drilled team, difficult to break down, like you mentioned. They don't mind if we have possession, so we could have a good amount of the possession, but it's going to be what you do with it. And this team, again, it's one pass, it's one long ball up to Gray, and see you later. We saw that at Turf Moor. That's what scares me about this match. You have to be prepared for that long ball. You have to be prepared that they're going to get it as quickly as possible up front to Gray. And we're going to have to be resolute, but I agree with you. I think this game, if Fulham are going to win it, it's going to be through the spine. That's where they're going to have to be strong, and then they're going to have to find a way up front to take advantage of their opportunities. All right, David, I think you pretty much have told me without saying it yet, you're starting 11 and your formation, but go ahead. Give me your starting 11 and your formation. I have a feeling it's going to be a 3-5-2.
You have. I have let the cat out of the bag already, so yeah. I imagine Lonergan is the continuing goal. Back three then, of course, will be Maddle, Byrne and Amabieta. I know some people will be probably throwing things at their computers now, saying, oh, how can we pick him after Saturday? But, you know, apart from the penalty, he did okay, Amabieta, I think. Byrne, you know, he has been, you know, a regular in the team. I don't think any reason why he wouldn't be. I just feel that he was given a rest, perhaps, ahead of this week. So I think we'll see Byrne back. Be very shocked if Maddle didn't play, because he's been, you know, consistently one of our best defenders since he came in. So that leaves the midfield two, and this is the biggest area, I think, of debate. I think Parker is a certainty. It's who you see alongside him is
that's right.
The difficult one. I'm going to go for O'Hara on the basis that, you know, he came off against Reading, whereas Baird didn't. And ahead of the fact that we don't know what's happened to Ince, Tunnicliffe is maybe too reckless and, yeah, maybe less creative than O'Hara, I don't know. Obviously, in front of them will be Tom Cairney and the wing-backs, of course, Fredericks and Garbett, McCormack and Dembele up front. Don't really see how else you could do it or who you could bring in, apart from obviously in the centre midfield, I guess you could argue a case for Baird, you could argue a case for Tynecliffe, you could argue a case for Ince even, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go for, say, Parker and O'Hara as my central two. Again, at the back, I mean, you could argue that Ream could come in, you know, perhaps he's a bit quicker than, you know, than Byrne, for example. But it would be, I don't know, it would be, again, a brave man to start changing it around, because we when we did see the change around in the order of how they played before, you know, against Middlesbrough, it all went a bit pear-shaped, really, isn't it, to accommodate Stearman. So I think the 3-5-2, or obviously a 3-4-1-2, as it turns out to be, will be the way we'll probably line up, because I think that gives us the best strength through the middle of the team and the best way to play, you know, with the fullbacks. I don't think they possess a massive threat wide, so I don't see any reason why we need to double up on either flank like we did against Reading. And as I say, the price you pay with McCormack having to come back into left midfield is too great a price for me. So let's see if we have this 3-4-1-2 tomorrow.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, because I'm going back and forth on the difference between, a 4-4-2 and 3-5-2, if I'm reading you correctly, it's because they don't have that same threat going down the wings, that you don't feel that defensively we would have any problems with a 3-5-2. Am I reading that correctly, David?
Yeah, I mean, they're still going to have some wing play, of course, but I think their biggest threat is through the middle. I mean, we still have Fredericks and Garbett who have to be responsible for, you know, two of their wide players, and of course, then it's going to depend who's picking up who really in anything else. You know, Boyd is a bit of a sort of a marauder, so I don't know if he'll be picked up by Fredericks or if he'll be picked up by, you know, even Maddle perhaps. And likewise, you know, on the other side, they have, you know, as I say, they have two banks of four, really. And they may use that to try and, you know, to smother the wings to stop us getting forward, of course. But then, if in that respect, we'll have the numeracy in the middle. We'll have the, you know, supremacy, I should say. We'll have the three against two in the middle if they use their two banks of four to stop us on the wings.
Right.
But I think they'll be pushing forward. They'll be trying to ask questions, and it'll be, if we can match up on in the wide positions as well, you know, not, it's all right sort of blocking him out in the middle. But we have to watch the wings as well. Say they're not a big crossing team, but nevertheless, they will try to get forward down the wings, I think. And so Boyd isn't he's not really a winger as such either, I think. He's a player who likes to cut inside and things and fall over normally. Fall over specialties. Remember this, you know, if we're giving away 10 penalties tomorrow night, it'll be George Boyd falling over people that's done it.
Oh, I totally agree with you, David. I couldn't agree with you any stronger on that. I'm not a fan of his, David. And who did he used to play for?
I remember when I went to see him at the KC Stadium, and that match. I think it was him and Altidore that game. It might have been anyway, and it was. Honestly, they should have bought them both beds, you know, because they were spending their whole time lying down on the floor. I don't know. Maybe Altidore picked it up from Boyd. I don't know, but I just don't like it anyway. It's just.
Neither do I, my friend.
But
I'm not.
That's what George Boyd
does. I'm not a fan of divers, David. I'm not a fan. You know that.
Well, George Boyd will be looking for every attempt to go to ground tomorrow, so we've got to be smart with him there. You know, as I say, Barton is wily in midfield. He'd be winding us up, so we make sure we don't, you know, fall into the traps there. Otherwise, there'll be a quick ball through the middle and graze off, and the ball's in the back of the net. And that's,
yeah.
You really, you know, I don't know what their weakness is, Burnley. They don't really have a weakness, but if they do, it'll be people like George Boyd who, you know, are reliant on falling over and people making stupid challenges, I suppose. Perhaps Jones, if Jones plays alongside Barton, you know, maybe he's their weakest central midfield player. You know, we have to try and get past Barton. Maybe Parker can do a job there. Defensively, we don't know, because until we get to test them, who knows what happens. But their track record is pretty good. And Michael Heaton in goal, isn't it? He's a great goalkeeper as well,
yes.
Remember? So even
yes.
If we get past the defence, they've got a good goalie at the back there. And, you
they
know,
totally
this is why they're top of the league. The league is
yeah.
Obviously, you know, a true reflection of their ability. So I think, you know, even a draw tomorrow would be a good result, much as it's not very helpful to get a point. It would be, you know, something to stop them. But, you know, they have a bad record at the Cottage. Can we continue? I don't know. We're not very good at these things at the moment. But it's not an easy place for them, I suppose, to come to London, you know, for a night match as well. Getting through the traffic and things, all these things can be very, I don't know, unsettling, I think, being stuck in traffic when you just want to get to the ground and get onto the match. You know, anything that works in our favour, really. You know, I hate it personally, being stuck in traffic. I'm sure some players, some of them have their headphones on and just listen to music, don't care, but others, I'm sure, will be getting jittery with that. So, you know, let's make it difficult from tomorrow, you know. I don't know what the weather's going to be like in London, but I know if it was Wednesday, it would be absolutely appalling because the weather forecast for Wednesday is terrible for the south of England, really heavy rain and winds, but not tomorrow, I don't think. But, you know, we can still make it a difficult atmosphere for us if the crowd come out and, you know, gets cold down by the river, on, you know, for a night game. Who knows what will happen tomorrow?
Okay, very good there, David. All right, let's go to predictions. Let's start with the Cottage Talk Twitter page. 105 votes, win 32%, draw 20%, loss 48%. So the majority of the Fulham supporters are predicting a loss. On the Cottage Talk Facebook page, we have some predictions. Yavor Alexiev, I can't see us winning this one, so 1-1. Guy Rofe says, going with my heart here, 1-1 as well. David Brukas says no one else will win it and then blow it on Saturday against Bristol City. Tom Ward said 3-2 to Burnley. Giannis says probably out to lunch, but I fancy us to nick it 1-0. Ibrahim Hussein says think we might be the surprise of the night and win 2-0. Stephen O'Keefe 2-1 to Fulham. Chris Davidson, well, it won't be anything ending in 0-0. Roger Lewis said 2-2 with 10 men because you know who will get sent off. You're going to appreciate this one. Ben Reed says, whatever David Holly says, I agree with. Very interesting. Reg Hollis says 3-0 to Burnley. Nav Kopchevsky says, if we play like we did on Saturday, then a stuffing Dembele shouldn't be lazy and no pens, please. Okay, those are the predictions. David, I know Ben's waiting patiently for your prediction because he's going with you. What's your prediction for this match?
Well, especially for you then, Ben, it's going to be 3-1 to Burnley.
3-1 to Burnley. And, David, I understand why you're going to pick that score, 3-1 to Burnley. It's funny because whoscored.com picked 3-1 to Burnley, and I understand that. They are in first for a reason, and we are where we are for a reason. But you know me. I'm a glass-half-full guy. I cannot pick a victory here, but I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I think we could get a point out of this, which I think would be very good. It would be beneficial. Confidence-wise, you obviously want 3 points. The bigger match for Fulham is going to be on Saturday. You would agree with that, David. But I think it would be a bonus because no one's really expecting them to get all 3 points. I say a bonus would even be just to get a point in this. So I'm going with a 1-1 draw, David. All right, my friend, before we wrap up, I have to mention one last thing because our Cottage Talk co-host, Giannis Chinaeus did not have a chance to give his rating for Slavisa. He just messaged it to me. You had a 5, David. Giannis had a 7.
Well, Giannis is Giannis obviously saw something different to me. I was disappointed with it, but we want to be behind Slavisa. I think we do want to be behind him, but. I thought moving McCormack was one of these big red lines. I mean, you know, had it been a slight change that didn't affect McCormack, so be it. But no, for me it was too much of a disruption. But being as well, and as is anyone else, and let's see what happens. I think when it comes down to tomorrow night, it could really be key to how we start. If we start like we did against Ipswich, then it's going to be a long night, I think. If we can, you know, be strong and frustrate them, then, you know, Ben Reed could be wrong.
You mean Ben Reed and David Holly?
No, Ben said he goes with whatever I said. So, yeah, Ben could be wrong.
Okay. Okay, David, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. Seriously, this was a great episode, great preview. We did it in 50 minutes, you know, and I thought it came out great. Great job, my friend, before we go.
Thanks very much. And, yeah, please, let's hope I'm wrong as well tomorrow, as well as Ben.
Okay, let's hope you guys are wrong. I would take a point, so let's hope I'm right. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, David. Have a good night, my friend. Enjoy the match tomorrow.
Cheers, Russ. Bye, everybody.